Frank, Hayes, and JJ.
Hit it!
It's time for The Frangie Show on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Your new drug today, Carlion, is a draft class.
I'll take it.
Welcome to the program, everybody. Glad you're with us on a Monday. As always, our Mondays are brought to you by the best bet, Frank Frangie, Hayes Carlion. JJ LaSelva with you. We'll be here till 6 o'clock talking draft and a little bit more, but mostly draft today on the program. Fun show today. Pete Jenkins, the longtime defensive line coach for LSU. He's only been doing it about 60 years. And I'm not kidding, 60 years.
Yeah, I didn't know he was at Florida in like 79.
He was at Florida under Charlie Pell.
Yeah.
And so, but he has been all around, been at LSU a lot, and a long, long, long time defensive line coach. And he coached both defensive linemen this year that are coming over from LSU. So, Pete and I talked earlier today. He's looking forward to it. So, and then Pete Prisco at 5 o'clock today. He's on vacation later, so we're going to bring him on today. So you might call this show Pete and Repeat.
That's right. And then Pete Davidson at 5:40.
Yeah, I've been waiting all day to say that.
Yeah, okay? I like it.
So sometimes I'm a very simple guy, Hayes, okay? I'm not all that clever, so I've been looking forward to that all day. A lot of things to talk about today. We'll talk mostly draft, the Jags that draft today. I think today's the day you look back at what they did, what the league did. It's amazing how big a deal the draft is. As long as we waited for it, I'll say this, Hayes, it doesn't disappoint in terms of attention, excitement. I mean, it felt like it's everywhere, didn't it? You're on the golf course, you're at the baseball field where I was a lot over the weekend. Everybody's talking, asking. If I had a dime for every time I heard someone, hey, what'd you think? You know, which is really cool, which is cool. So, and we'll get to how the Jags did in a minute, but it's amazing how enormous it is. It really is.
No doubt about it. Tell me about the baseball park. What was going on?
Well, I appreciate
there.
You asking. We brought in the Players Alliance. That is a group of 150 minority former major league players, that African American players who are determined to grow the game because it's been difficult doing so. The RBI program, which is owned by MLB, is good, but the Players Alliance is a private group of former players. Marquise Grissom, everybody knows the Braves, knows Marquise Grissom, heads it up, and he and three of his buddies, four former players, were in town. We had 60 coaches out there at the coaches' clinic on Saturday morning. We had 700 players at our opening day.
Wow.
62 teams, 63 teams worth of players. All in underserved areas in the inner city and beyond. And it was just a marvelous day. It was one of the best days we ever had, Hayes. It was, you know, I say this all the time, all these kids should get to play baseball, not just the kids with means. And every time I say that, I'm not disrespectful of or putting down travel and expensive baseball. It serves kids well. It gets kids scholarships. It's wonderful that that many people are that committed to the sport of baseball, the people in the travel community. And I mean that very sincerely. This has never been a negative toward them. But there's the higher percentage of folks can't afford that. So what if we make baseball available for everybody? Well, they all have the sweet uniforms, and they all get the coaching, and they all get the good gear. And that's what we did. So we're very proud of that. Seeing these little kids at those unis.
I bet.
I'm telling you, if you played Little League Baseball, JJ, you know this. Remember when you first got that uniform and you were 11?
Picture day.
Remember how you took it home, though, and you put that thing on? Shane Matthews sent me a tweet that I slept in mine. I get it. It was we all remember the first time you put that uniform on, and it was amazing stuff. So these kids. So thank you for asking, Hayes. It was a wonderful day, and we had a wonderful time, and a lot of kids got to wear uniforms and play baseball, and it starts our season. Our season starts today, actually, our walk-off season with 63 teams from ages 4 through 13. So ages 4, that's the old. And then our scout team, which is our older team, tried out and practiced for the first time on Sunday. So we got a lot of good stuff going on. We'll talk about more of that as the season goes on. I'll say this. I liked the Jags draft. I liked it, Hayes. I think that it wasn't perfect. I wish they had an edge, an edge that came in. I would have liked to have seen a true edge that came in a little bit earlier. I think there's one thing they missed in my mind. Is an edge. I wish they had done that. I do think Miles Cole will play outside, but I think he's a big end more than a true edge. But other than that, I like the draft. Listen, it was very clear what they were going to do. They got a big physical deep receiver. We talked about this on Friday in Brian Thomas Jr. So they got a field stretcher, which they needed. They got two specialists, a kicker and a return guy. They got two really fast corners. We'll see how good they are, but they both can really run. And they got four big, physical, 6'6", 300-pound guys on both sides of the ball. We all said the biggest, and they said the biggest weakness of this team was physicality in the interior. Nobody debated that. That was what cost them more than anything else, is physicality in the interior. It personified itself more than ever in the last game when the Titans, who couldn't block anybody, mauled them at the line of scrimmage and stuffed them at the line of scrimmage. Two thoughts we'll all have that were a microcosm of the season, or at least the end of the season, Hayes. A, Derrick Henry running crazy after their line didn't do a very good job all year in that last game. And B, Trevor Lawrence trying to dive over the top and the line getting pushed back and the quarterback sneak not working. Won't you? I think that's what remains in our mind. And I think that's what Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson talked about at length, almost ad nauseum, every time they were asked. We have to get more physical in the interior. It's the first thing both said to me at the combine. We had them one-on-one. It's the first thing they've said at their presser. They went out and got physical guys. And we'll see if they're the right guys. You don't know that till you play. All you can do is go get guys that seem like the right guys. So I thought I would have preferred an edge early. That's the one thing I think they missed on. But other than that, I liked the draft. I really did.
Yeah, I liked the draft as well. I gave them an A-. Now, a big part of that is the acquiring the third and fourth round picks from Minnesota in 25. To me, that almost gives them three-quarters of a letter grade of a difference. So I viewed it as, in terms of how they played the game on draft night, because that's really all you can grade, is who was there. We don't know how good these guys are going to be. So it's how well did you play the game. Well, I think they played the game in terms of the guys that they took, where they took them, at about a B level. I think it was good. It wasn't anything extraordinary, but it was good and easily justifiable. But then to me, when you add on getting a third and a fourth in the 25 draft, that is a big deal. I mean, Brian Thomas is going to be the signature piece of this draft, and we'll see about Mason Smith and the others that followed. But that third-round pick that they just got from the Vikings, that could turn into a big-time veteran through a trade this summer or at the deadline. And it may not even need to be as high as a third. But to be armed with two threes, two fours, a fifth, and obviously they have their first and second, they are going to be able to be incredibly active in terms of adding a player either in the summer. I would, you know, certainly talk about edge. That's a concern, the depth there. But that's where I think they did such a great job of securing Brian Thomas, getting those additional picks. And then, yeah, I mean, they added some great bulk. I mean, two defensive tackles, a swing tackle, a developmental big edge. You do get an elite kicker prospect in the sixth round. And look, we talked about it for months. It was the bad draft. NIL has created a world where if you're going to be a late round pick, you're probably going to be able to find a college that's going to pay you more than what you would get as a sixth, seventh round pick or an undrafted free agent. So
might have been 100 players could have been drafted that didn't come out.
Absolutely.
The number might be as high as 100.
Yeah, so you knew that this was going to be a draft where maybe you take a kick returner. That's what he is. That's what Keelan Robinson is.
Correct.
He is a kick returner. Right? They're not going to give him a lot of reps at running back, but you're going to have two guys back there. And we've talked at length about this. Whoever figures out this new rule and how to play it first, I think is going to have a game and a half edge on everybody else. I think it is going to be the difference in a team making the playoffs this year or missing out if they've got a really good roster, but they can't cover it. They can't produce anything in the return game. The more I think about this rule, the more I think you could see somebody this year with four kick returns for touchdowns. Because if you get a crease in this thing, it's over.
Right.
It's gone. I mean, that's it. So to draft a player like Keelan Robinson, I think in a draft this week at the bottom, I think it makes a lot of sense, certainly getting Cam Little to solidify the kicker position. You can't go week to week not knowing who the kicker is going to be, because you're in a world where it's journeyman after journeyman after journeyman, and if he misses one, you've got to answer the questions of, is he going to be here, is he not going to be here? So I think Cam Little, assuming he's what they believe he is, I think he unseats, obviously, Joey Sly and Patterson, and he ends up being the guy, and that's a good thing. So, I mean, again, Brian Thomas, you got to love that and what it can do for the offense. Mason Smith is the closest thing to a Chris Jones type in terms of traits in this draft because he's much longer than Byron Murphy out of Texas. I think there's a lot to like about this draft, but again, wait and see what that third and fourth rounder turns into, because I think there's a good chance it's going to turn into a pretty good veteran. I don't even know that they'll ever make those picks.
I will tell you this, with the team they have now and the draft picks they made, to me, the key to the success of this draft, to me, Thomas, obviously, he is a starter from day one. There's no debating that. He is a stretch-the-field starter that I'm sure will start alongside Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk. Let me make a point about Zay Jones, too, by the way. People say, well, you don't need Zay Jones now. That could not be further from the truth. People get hurt. And with all due respect, you don't want to be the team that the minute someone twists their ankle, you're playing Elijah Cooks or Parker Washington. I don't mean to be disrespectful to either guy, but that's if you're trying to win a Super Bowl, you don't want to be playing Elijah Cooks an entire game because a guy turned an ankle. And people lose sight of that sometimes. We see starters. You know what I mean? We see 22 starters. I love the fact that if it holds, that Walker Little isn't starting. I think he's an okay player. That Zay Jones, I'm assuming, isn't a starter today. I think he's an okay player. I think Tank Bigsby, if he develops, you have to have guys that don't start. You have that can help. If you're going to be good, like really good, you have to have that. So but nonetheless, back to the draft. The key to the draft for me, the key to this draft, and by the way, I hope Cam Little's the kicker. I like the fact that it'll be legit competition. It'll be Cam Little and Joey Sly and Riley Patterson. My guess is they want Little to win the job, but they wouldn't have drafted him. And he looks like he might be an elite kicker, and the other two haven't been elite, so hopefully he wins it, to your point. But the key to the draft for me is Thomas, A, B, one of the defensive tackles is special, C, one of the cornerbacks can play a lot of football. If those three things happen, if Thomas is what – you need Thomas to be really good. For the draft to be a good draft, you need Thomas to be really good. You need one of the three defensive linemen, assuming it's Mason Smith, but you need one of the three defensive linemen to be an impact player this year, and you need one of those two cornerbacks to really get in the mix, whether they start outside, whether they start in the nickel, where they play a lot of football in the dime, whether they help you win games. That's the key to the draft. One of the defensive linemen, one of the cornerbacks, affecting the team positively, and Brian Thomas being special. If that happens, it's a good draft. Now, that doesn't mean you want the other guys not to be good, Hayes, but those are the three keys to me for this year's draft.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, I think people have gotten a little too wrapped up in the corner and passing on Quinyon Mitchell at 17 and electing to trade back and then passing on Terrion Arnold with the 23rd pick. And looking at this, they have added two players that are ideal for what they now want to do defensively, what Doug Peterson wants to do, why he hired coordinator Ryan Nielsen. They want to be press man. And Jarian Jones and DeAndre Prince are about as good as you can find in this draft. They're exceptional speed guys. They're sub-4.4s. They've played a ton of football. And Jarian, you can just tell, is going to have I think young leader. It's obviously it's difficult as a rookie, and that's a room that's got some veteran guys. But I think from an acclimation standpoint, he's going to be sensational. I think he's a day one starter. I think he unseats. I think it's Noel against Noel, but I think he unseats Darby pretty quick. And I'll say for Trey Prince, to find him in the fifth round, again, with his measurables and the fact that, again, he's played a lot of games in the SEC, which was a theme, and bash me all you want, but I think there is something to taking guys out of LSU and Florida State, Missouri and Ole Miss and
Absolutely
Texas.
I
like players that have played in front of 90,000 people. I like players that have played in the loudest environment they'll ever face, because nothing in the NFL matches a difficult road environment in big-time college football. And I like that they've been in the spotlight. You know, that's just, to me, that always is going to mean something. I understand stars will come from small schools. But for me, I'd much rather have a draft that's got a bunch of SEC guys, a Florida State guy, and I'll take my chances. And so I do think that I think Jarian is going to be really good right out of the gate. But we get wrapped up in, you know, guys that are ranked ahead of them, but they do totally different things. I mean, again, corner is wide ranging in terms of your skill set, and they were specifically looking for guys that could play up and press, and I think they found two really good candidates for that. So
yeah, and to your point, everyone assumes those guys are nickels. Don't assume they're nickels. Don't assume that Jarian James is necessarily going to be a nickel. I know that's where he played at FSU. I get it, but I know Doug said that's where we're going to start him out at. But I think both guys are going to get a look outside. There's no doubt in my mind about that. They're both going to get a look outside.
They absolutely will.
Yeah. So don't just assume they're
particularly
nickel.
If they really are committed to the Savage at nickel thing.
Yeah, which I think they are. They could, when they signed Darnell Savage, they could have said, "Hey, he's versatile. He's played safety. We also think he could play inside some." That wasn't the narrative. The narrative was we went and got Darnell Savage to be our nickel. They were very clear about that in free agency. So I agree with you. Here's the other thing. You could have drafted Terrion Arnold or Quinshon Mitchell in the first round and not taken Brian Thomas. But let's be real. In today's football, the receivers are the stars. If I asked you to run off the best receivers, you'd run off Tyreek Hill and Ayuk and Amon St. Brown and Justin Jefferson and on and on. If I asked you to run off the five or six best cornerbacks in football, you know what we'd all do? We'd name two or three, then we get stalled. Because they're not – and sorry, defensive guy that's listening right now – they're not the stars that the receivers are in today. They're just not. Today's football, the receivers are the stars.
Well, and the game is so shifted towards them.
That's why.
I mean, the rules are just so much more tilted towards the receiver than the defensive back. So, yeah, if you're going to invest heavily in a position, it would make sense that you would do it on the offensive side of the ball. And, again, I think everybody got wrapped. I was worried about Darby being a starter, but it didn't have to necessarily be a first round corner. To me, it was just their most glaring, like that's the one starter that they need to really either unseat, or which they would have done with a first round corner. There wouldn't have been much of a battle there.
Yeah, I agree with
there's
you.
There's still going to be, I think, a little bit of a battle with Jarian Jones, but I think Jarian Jones wins the job. I think Darby becomes I think he becomes a reserve, and I would not count Prince turning heads.
See, I see. You think Jarian Jones is going to – if you had to flip a coin right now, you think Jarian Jones is going to – I do too. I we've heard nickel, nickel, slot, 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 nickel, slot, nickel, nickel, slot, inside, inside, inside. I think there's a damn good chance. I know where he played at FSU. I watched. I got a TV. But I think there's a damn good chance he starts outside opposite Tyson Campbell and the Darnell Savage is their nickel. I think there's a really good chance that when they play for the first time in base formation or nickel, whatever, not nickel, I guess, it's Tyson Campbell and Jones outside and Darnell Savage. And I really believe, but no one's saying that. But I think that too. I tell you what, I'll bet that's what they hope happens.
There's no doubt about
it. I'll bet that's where they hope it lands.
They'll be disappointed if Darby starts week one.
I think they'll – right. And it's not about Darby as much as you went and got two corners who can really run.
Well, and he's at the end of the road. He's trying to keep it together for another year or two.
Yeah, so again, my biggest concern – and you're right, by the way. Corner's the one spot. The reason we all focused on corners so much as well as receiver and edge and other things we thought they might do. But the reason we focus on corner so much, that's the one spot that it feels like they need a starter. It didn't feel like they needed a starter at receiver. I think they upgraded.
Right.
But it didn't feel like they needed one. I agree with you, Hayes. It felt like they needed a starter out there. So again, I worry about edge. Yeah, I was talking to
That's me. The biggest concern on the roster is the edge.
Yeah,
step.
Yeah. I was talking to me and Taylor in the back before I came on the air, and Mia made a good point about the guys out. Bud Dupree's out there. There's a handful of those guys out there that the Jags typically haven't gone and gotten that guy later, but they haven't been in a window quite like this one. I hope this is the year they go get the Bud Dupree or whoever's out there. I hope this is the year, even more than going and getting a veteran corner. I know that's been floated in the universe as well.
I'd want to see what Jarian can do first before I would invest in that.
Yeah, I hope they go get a veteran. And by the way, that's not an edge that's going to come in here and start. You got your starters, but that's a rotational position.
Yeah.
And that's also a position where veterans are good, man. Veteran, that's the one, because they have pass rush moves. They know all the offensive tackles. That's a position where the guy that's been around, and you can slow down a little bit at edge. If you slow down at corner, you're done because the guy's running by you. You can slow down a little. A 31-year-old edge, a 30-year-old edge has a better chance than a 30-year-old cornerback because slowing down at that spot doesn't matter as much. So I hope they entertain that. All right, that's it. So I like the draft. I do worry a little bit about edge. That's the one spot. They signed a bunch of undrafted guys. Typically, when you sign undrafted free agents, I mean, look, James Robinson was a good player for a little bit. There's some guys that step up. But for the most part, those guys don't make the team. I know people focus a lot on them.
I think this roster has evolved to the point where it's going to be really, really
difficult. I think so, too.
I did a post-draft 53-man projection this morning. It's on 1010XL.com if anybody wants to see it.
It's very
free.
Good. I saw it.
Oh, thanks.
And I agree with most of it.
Yeah.
I don't think they cut Tyler Lacy. I think you had him cut. But I do.
I just don't think he fits, but that's a conversation.
But I agree with most of it.
Yeah, I just think that as their roster stands now, I think it's going to be awfully difficult for an undrafted guy to get in there. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, there certainly have been surprises. But when they had that run of an undrafted guy, at least one making the 53 for so many years, well, they stunk. And they stunk at a lot of spots on the roster. This roster is absolutely, the expectation should be that they make the tournament. That should be the expectation with this draft. In terms of their starters, there's really no glaring weakness. To your point earlier, they've got some really strong depth now at offensive line. They've got strong depth at receiver. In looking at it, there's certainly concerns. Edge is a concern. If something happens to Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker,
that's right,
they are not prepared to handle that. But in terms of how this roster looks, yeah, I think it's going to be an awfully difficult putt for an undrafted free agent to make this 53. And it's certainly a roster that the minimum expectation should be a 9-win season at the worst.
Jarvis Landry thing's interesting.
It is interesting. He's never been a big runner, so he's right. 31 and he's been out of football for a while. Yeah. But why not kick the tires and see? I mean, obviously he is very savvy and has had a wonderful career, but there's no risk to it, see what he's got.
I like where they are. The draft was fun. The draft was fun. I will say this, all the conversations we had about it being a weaker draft because NIL is keeping some guys in school. Boy, when you go look at teams' list of draft picks, it doesn't wow you. Not anybody's.
Yeah, it was.
There wasn't one team where I would look at their draft list and go, "Oh boy, they killed it." Nobody.
We were 15 picks in on Friday night in the second round, and I'm looking at my buddies in the media room going, I don't know any of these guys.
What was so weird.
Honestly,
all of us
where's all the talent in this draft? I mean, it was amazing to me how quickly it downshifted from years past.
Yeah, but 100% right. But a bunch of guys you did know their name didn't go or went late. Michael Pratt, I was convinced, would go in the middle of the draft. Jordan Travis didn't go to the fifth round. There were a bunch of – Spencer Rattler went late. So it was interesting, that big run on quarterbacks, then the dearth.
Yeah, it was a record amount of picks between quarterback selections because there were so many at the top. Then there was like 157 selections between Knicks and Rattler.
Yeah,
it was very peculiar.
And everybody loved Pratt. He didn't get taken.
And look at Jerry Rice's kid.
Yeah.
The receiver who went in the seventh round to the Chargers. So I mean, there was certainly some surprises,
right,
and there were some that weren't. Like I thought, for the Titans to take Tavondre Sweat as high as they did. Boy, that's a gamble, a big-time character gamble.
Two other things stood out. FSU had 10 draft picks, which was fantastic. What a really good football team they had. 9 were in the portal.
Oh, yeah.
They had 9 of the 10 FSU guys. So that shows you Mike Norvell, while he's getting caught up in recruiting high school guys, what an eye he had, whether he saw them, developed them, or both, what an eye. 9 of the 10 were in the portal. Georgia had its standard 8 guys. That's an off year, by the way. It's
right,
an off year for Kirby Smart. Florida had one guy. The last time Florida had one guy drafted, Let me put this in perspective for you. I was a drunk student at the Chelsea Street pub, okay? I was in school the last time they had one guy drafted. Now, I know you're thinking, well, Frank, you're young and hip. I am. I was in school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, this is the final reminder of how little Dan Mullen cared and how little talent he had for recruiting. And, you know, because, again, look at it's not like Florida had a bunch of kids leaving the portal when Napier came in and they littered the draft.
Right.
I mean, I think Mullen brought in, I think Tyron Hopper got picked the third round.
That was about it.
And that was it.
Yeah, and I'll say two things.
Florida had one guy. Yeah. Dan Mullen had nothing to do with.
Well, I'll say two things. A, Mullen obviously didn't recruit anybody. That's the storyline. That's the thesis statement. Everyone's right. The other part of it is Napier hasn't done a very good job in the portal. Because other than
he should have absolutely flipped the roster immediately. Want to.
There should have been some portal guys that impacted the draft. Maybe not a lot, but there should have been some guys in the portal other than just Pearsall, who it shouldn't have been one guy. It should have been they should have had four guys drafted, three guys in the portal, you know, at one. So that's on Mullen and Napier in my mind.
It'll be interesting if Napier ever does get it going at Florida and is able to build them into a championship contender. If he ever, because I don't think he's done it yet, and it's tough for him to do it now because he's under such scrutiny, but if he ever gets safe to where he can kind of talk about the early days, if he ever explains, well, I know that everybody thinks I should have flipped the roster, but there's a reason in terms of building this thing we didn't flip it, and while it didn't pay immediate dividends, it does today.
You're building a culture of trust. I get that. We'll talk about that. Let's take a break. Let's get back to Jaguars football. Two big defensive linemen are coming from LSU, Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson. Pete Jenkins, a veteran defensive line coach for LSU, coached both of them. Pete's a good guy. He likes both players. He'll join us after the break to talk LSU defensive linemen. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Time now for the voice of the day. Presented by South State Bank. Welcome to Banking Forward.
Hey, we welcome you back to the program. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, J.J. LaSelva with you. What a pleasure to bring in on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. Pete Jenkins, the longtime defensive line coach at LSU. He certainly coached those two terrific linemen, joins us now on the program. Pete, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, Frank. Thanks a lot for having me.
I really appreciate you spending time with us. All right, we have two of your guys here, Mason Smith. You and I talked a little bit earlier today about these guys, Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson. We're thrilled to have them. Let's start with Mason. Obviously, he was a second-round pick here. Didn't play a lot of football at LSU because of an injury. Tell me a little bit about Mason and what makes him special, Pete.
Mason is a gifted athlete, number one. Number two, he's really a dependable, high-class guy. And number three, loves the game. Number four, he's got a good high IQ, football IQ. And I think, Frank, I think he's got so much football. We were speaking this morning. He's only played 16 college football games.
Right.
I think Mason's upside is so great because he's got so much football in front of him. I think he's going to – and he will work, man. He will work hard. He's a very conscientious guy. And I think he's got the upside is his football is all in front of him, and he's going to be a successful pro player.
Hey, Coach, this is Hayes Carline. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Mason's length is obviously extraordinary, his wingspan. From a technique standpoint, how is he learning to play with that and utilize that advantage?
Well, I think he's a guy that can bend. And, you know, that's really important when you got a guy that has his stature and everything. He's a bender, a knee bender, and he doesn't play. I thought he improved an awful lot last year, not playing so high and being able to keep a good low pad level. And I think, I think this is all, he's going to be better and better at it because he works at it. And he's very conscientious with his work. I think he's just going to get better and better.
Pete, we talked to him. He's a confident cat now. I like that. I mean, he knows he's gifted, boy. He was, he wasn't surprised he was taken that high. A confident guy, that's what we read. Is that a good read on him, you think?
Yeah, I think confidence. And, you know, I don't think cocky. I don't think arrogant in any way. But I do think he is confident in his ability. And I think he's very confident in what he's going to do in the future in football. I do agree with that.
Pete, how would you say Mason is wired? It seems like his mother is very successful in the medical field, and his father was a successful businessman owning a petroleum company. What kind of person is Mason?
He's a great guy to be around. I enjoyed being around him. He has a pleasant personality. I think he's a really good-hearted person, very sincere. And Frank and I were talking this morning, you know, I find him to be a good team guy. I think that the Jaguars investment in him, he's going to be wanting to represent the Jaguars in the right way on the field and off the field. And he's going to play hard because he's a team guy. He wants to, he's not selfish like some individuals I've been around. I think he's really team oriented, and he's going to want you guys to do the best and win championships.
Pete Jenkins with us, defensive line coach, does a terrific job at LSU. Let's get to Jordan Jefferson now. Pete, we were talking today. You just got to meet him. He played at Missouri 3 years, got to LSU last year. That's got to be a hard process. With the way the portal is now, guys are changing all the time. I know that. But it's still got to be hard to play somewhere 3 years and then quickly get adjusted to your new school. How did Jordan do? And tell us a little about him.
Yeah, he's now, I don't know if you've met him, but he's quiet.
Okay.
He's kind of opposite from Mason as far. Mason's a real, as you said, he's a real outgoing guy and got a world of personality. Jordan does, but he's quiet. He's a very conscientious guy, though. Let me tell you, sincere about getting things done the right way. And it was a process for Jordan. You know, he was in a new system, and it was a system that he had never been around or been accustomed to or whatever. So the thing that we recognized early about him was his effort and everything during the games. He puts a lot into it, like he should, but his technique was not where we thought it should be or could, and he made sure that he got it, and really, I thought he, as the year went along, I thought he just really grew by leaps and bounds, and I credit that to his effort to get things right, conscientious, serious about his work. And, you know, he's physically, he's a pretty stout guy physically. I mean, he's got a great upper body strength. I forget how many he did at the combine.
34.
Yes. That's a pretty good week's work right there. But he's a 700-pound squatter. I mean, he is physically mature. I liked him. Listen, I didn't hear any time last year, Mason or Jordan or skipping class, missing this. They're guys that go about there. They have maturity about the way they approach their lives, and you know, they were just great. I mean, they two people I really have an awful lot of respect for. And admiration about the way they handle themselves.
Coach, I know Ed Ogeron considers you his mentor. Obviously, Ryan Nielsen, the new Jaguars defensive coordinator, mentions Coach Ogeron as one of his big mentors. What can you tell us about Ryan Nielsen? Have you ever had a chance to be around him? Do you have any thoughts about
You got to ask him that. Okay. I've been working with Nielsen a long time.
Okay.
Nielsen and I. Ed kind of put us together, and Nielsen and I have been, I don't know, countless hours together. But he was at NC State
yep.
When I first started working with him. And You know, I think he is a he's a star, man. He is really good at what he does. And the Saints, I thought he did a tremendous job with the Saints. And the thing with the Saints, it, you don't hear it talked about very much, but there was a year there that he was starting free agents, and he was starting. He really didn't have a lot of, due to injuries and situations, he didn't have a lot of. And you know what was just really impressive about it? They maintained a very high level of play. And I tell you, that was the due to the players' effort, and it was due to really good coaching by Nielsen. I think Nielsen's a damn good football coach. I really do. And I thought he did a great job at Atlanta. I tried to kind of keep up with him because of my fondness for him. And I thought they really did it. And I heard him say on TV one day, Atlanta hadn't played this good on defense in 10 years.
Yeah,
he's very organized, and he's smart. Ryan is a very smart guy. So I have a strong background with him, as do I with Jeremy Garrett, the D-line coach.
Sure, sure.
I don't know where you guys, but he's a rising star.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. You're right.
Well, I think Jeremy, he's been in Auburn, and I do consulting work in the winter. And I've had a chance to spend hours with Jeremy. Very, very high on him. And I think those guys are Bill Shuey, I worked with when I was with the Eagles. Rory Segris, who is a assistant over there, mm-hmm. was my GA at Auburn years ago and worked with me at the Eagles. So I think that staff is a defensive staff, and I'm sure they're all on offense, but I don't know those guys. But I think it's a real, really good, young, capable defensive staff.
Yeah, I do too, Pete. I really do. Hey, final thing. Pete and I were talking earlier, and we were talking about the two defensive linemen. Hayes and Pete told me, by the way, that offensive guy you got is
yes,
really good
sir.
Too. And you wanted to make a point to tell me what good dudes they are. That stood out. First, yes. Pete and I got talking this morning. The first thing he says, man, those are three really good guys, and they build
are.
A culture. That's a good thing, man. I appreciate you sharing that. Tell me a little bit about Brian. He's a great guy too, right?
Well, you know, I don't know him as well, of course. You know, I was a big fan of his on Saturday when he was catching everything they were throwing to him. And, you know, the thing about him, too, he's strong. He can run. He can advance the football after the catch. He can catch a BB to begin with, and then he really has the speed and the strength to run the football once he gets his hands on it. But I would say the same thing about him as I would the other two guys we talked about. I never heard any time, he was where he shouldn't have been, or he was not where he should have been, or, you know, I think he's a high-character guy, too. And I know this, he is a tremendous competitor when the lights come on. He is, it brings out some great stuff from that young man. I think he's going to be an outstanding receiver.
We are now LSU East, and we're happy to be it. Pete, thank you so much for spending time. I hope you get over here sometime to see those cats play, but we really appreciate it. Thank you, Pete.
You bet. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay. Pete Jenkins, the really legendary defensive line coach at LSU, does a fantastic – so respected.
He's seen it all.
Seen it all. So respected in the business. I wanted to get him on today, and he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, great job.
Talking LSU football and three brand-new Jaguars that are coming from LSU. Back in a moment. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Best Bet Monday on The Frangie Show with fantastic locations in Jacksonville, Orange Park, and now in St. Augustine. It's Best Bet.
Frangie and Carline, J.J. LaSelva. My guy Pete Jenkins is 82, by the way.
Yeah.
And still the defensive line coach at LSU. Isn't that great?
Rock star.
Yeah, and he a lot, by the way, great question about Nielsen. I didn't know, shame on me. Pete's been around forever. He was at Florida when I was a student there. But I didn't know he was that close to Ryan Nielsen. That was a great call. I mean, and you're right, you did the Eddie O connection.
Right.
But he loved Ryan Nielsen. That was great stuff.
Yeah, it was. And again, you know, I will say I've come around on the Ryan Nielsen hire, because initially I was like, boy, they really need to go get somebody with experience. You know, go get that you know, Mike Zimmer, or go get a guy that's Ron Rivera, that's done it all and can be sort of a lieutenant for Doug Peterson, not just with coordinating the defense, but also just being a resource, as somebody that's been a head coach. And so when I saw that it was a coordinator that had only done it for a year, and you know, it was like, well, you just fired a guy that's done it for two. This guy is even more inexperienced. But I mean, everything that you hear about Ryan Nielsen, obviously, you know, we've had a chance to talk with him in Indianapolis, and I mean, he seems incredibly sharp, and
right,
and so it will be fun to see what he's able to do with this Jaguar defense, because it doesn't really feel like they've had an elite defensive mind as a coach in a while. Like, the 17 defense was all because they just had a ton of talent. And I get that goes hand in hand, but I'm hopeful that Ryan Nielsen becomes, you know, one of the best defensive minds that they've ever had as defensive coordinator in franchise history.
I've gone through some of the other teams, and we'll do this later on as the week goes along, because we're going to bring in Pete Prisco in a minute. But I went through the other teams in the division and their drafts. Nothing really jumped off the page. I think the Colts getting Mitchell in the second round after getting Latu, if he stays healthy, was good stuff.
Those are two big medical questions.
Yeah, but both of them are. And so we'll see. But, I mean, I didn't – you know, I didn't
– I was glad they took both those players.
Yeah, that didn't wow me.
And I was glad the Titans took Sweat.
Yeah, and I mean, and obviously –
in the second round. I mean, a lot of people thought he was going to fall to the fourth, fifth.
Yeah, I mean, the Titans, yeah, we went through – nothing really grabbed me. But, again, it's weird. I will tell you –
and the Texans didn't have a first rounder.
The Titans got Latham, who a lot of people really liked. I can tell you, he was a very highly regarded guy. And then Sweat after that. But then after that, nothing really, again, for me, moved the needle of the stuff they did. I mean, at least, again, for me.
And I thought the same thing. I thought the Jaguars had the best draft of the four. I thought all four of them, none of them were spectacular. The teams that I really thought were sensational were Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and the Rams.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody in the AFC South necessarily was incredibly great.
Right.
But I thought that the Jaguars had the best of the four, because – the Colts, it's just, I mean, you're taking a guy in the first round that has already medically retired once.
Yeah, if as far as the Texans go, if Lassiter can play outside, and I'm not sure he can, but if Lassiter can play outside, and then obviously they have a pretty good secondary. Other than that, nothing they did moved the needle for
them. Yeah, and Lassiter was slow as molasses in the process, so that's certainly a concern. And, you know, and again, I, you know, taking T'Vondre Sweat so high, you know, and ignoring the fact that he's had weight problems, and I, you know, the off the field thing, the DUI, you know, I mean, that's obviously terrible timing, but it's more just the physical shape that he keeps himself in. You know, is that going to be an issue? And you know, so I. And even, you know, even Latham, for drafting seventh, I thought we'll see what he turns into, but that didn't overly bother me.
I agree with you on the Rams, and maybe just because it's a bunch of guys I've heard of, but the Rams took the two FSU guys who I thought were both such really good players. Man, you know, I'm glad Brian Thomas Jr.'s here. I knew they liked him. That's why I picked him in that media mock draft for the Jags. But boy, when Verse was there, there's a side of me that really, you can't draft them both.
Right.
But boy, I would love to see.
And then the Rams got Corum and Kitchens.
And they got both Corum and Kitchens. Kitchens from Miami. Corum, of course, the running back from Michigan. So that might be the one that, of all of them, stood out to me the most. I think of all the teams, you said the Steelers got a bunch of linemen.
But I think that's good for them.
Yeah.
To get Faautano and Frazier.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that is, and look, to get Roman Wilson when they got him, you know, we knew some of these receivers would fall.
Yeah.
Roman Wilson fell pretty late. And then they got Peyton Wilson, who is an injury risk.
But he's a pretty good player.
But I'm willing to take an injury risk in the fourth round.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm willing to take an injury risk with the 15th pick in the draft.
How do you think the quarterbacks will all do? Caleb Williams, we all expect he's going to do well.
I think
he's
going to be good.
What about after that?
I think Jaden Daniels will be really good. I think Drake May will bust.
You do?
Yeah, I think Penix will bust. Of course, he's never going to play, but by the time he plays, he's going to bust.
He'll be like 40.
Yeah, exactly. And Nix will bust. And McCarthy, I think, will bust.
I think Drake May will be pretty good. I don't know that it'll be great, but I think Drake May is going to be pretty good. I'm still not convinced Daniels will be significantly better than him. I think he'll be pretty good. Penix, it's hard to get a feel because when is he going to – what's going to happen?
Well, if Kirk Cousins stays healthy, yeah, he's definitely not playing his first 2 years.
Correct. And so we'll see. I don't think J.J. McCarthy is going to be great. I think best case for J.J. McCarthy is he's game manager guy. I think that's the best case. I think Bo Nix will be gunslinger guy, good at times, not good at other times. And who am I missing? Who'd I miss? I said Penix, Nix.
I think you got them all.
I did, yeah. I guess I had them all. Yeah, because I had said McCarthy. So I do think Williams will be very good. I think Daniels will be pretty good. I think Drake May is going to be good. I think, again, I don't know that he's going to be great, you know, but I think his floor is Andy Dalton. Plays a long time and is okay. And I think his ceiling's pretty good. So I think he's got a chance to be a good player. Let's keep it on the NFL. We'll take a break. When we come back, Pete Prisco joins us early this week. He's going to wrap up the draft. He gets out of town on vacay. So Pete Prisco from CBS Sports joins us after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Time for all things Jaguars and NFL with Pete Prisco. The Prisco Report, presented by Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles.
Showtime.
On the Frangie Show.
The draft is in the books. Let's bring in Pete Prisco now to recap that draft, always brought to you by Showtime. Just had that great, great card show. Most recently, they just had JSA authentication in there, and you always get the best cards and collectibles. Nobody does a better job. Big location there. Go see him in the corner of Phillips and Chad. Of course, you can find him on all the social channels, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That is Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles. Pete joins us now. Pete, what'd you think? Jaguars, I liked their draft. I would have liked an edge. I think that's the one thing they might have missed. But by and large, I kind of like what they did. What do you think?
I did too. I mean, look, you know, Matt, I've been critical of Mr. Balky over there, but I thought he had a good couple of days. I really did. And I wouldn't say that if I didn't mean it. You know that. I think I gave him a good solid B. You know, I love getting Thomas. You remember we talked about him the other day. He was the guy that I thought they might go after.
Right.
I had him there in my first mock. They traded down, got extra picks. I love the second round pick. And I know a lot of people, he was on my better than team. And I know a lot of people say, well, he wasn't productive last year. He was coming off an ACL. At the end of the year, you could start seeing Mason Smith start to show off his toughness and his skills from before the injury. I think he can be a dominant inside player. I love that pick. I think that's a hit for sure when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I agree, Pete. And look, I mean, the other part of this, too, is by trading down and acquiring that extra third and fourth and 25, they can go and make a move this summer if they want, or maybe make a move right before the deadline. I mean, they are going to be well-armed to add a big-time veteran if they need to, either this summer or at the deadline.
Right, and the more picks you have, the better it is. And they were handcuffed by not having those picks last year because of the Ridley. So I agree with you. And you know, the third-round nickel corner, you know what that tells me? They weren't playing Savage at the nickel no matter what, right? I mean, it sure appears that way. And so I think, you know, it was a good, solid draft. And, you know, I normally would ping them for getting a kicker because there's a million of them. But the back end of that draft was so depleted, I didn't even mind that.
What about Edge? Bud Dupree's out there again. Some of us were talking about that in the office today. Others are going to be out there. Last year, gosh, Pete, they Floyd and Clowney, so many of them were out. They were out there forever, man. Ingram, they never got signed, it seemed like, till the very end. Is this the year the Jags go get a guy like that? Because that is the backup edge is the one spot that I'm still concerned about.
And corner.
Yeah,
Though they drafted a couple, you could still use a veteran corner. And there are guys they're talking to in the cornerback position. I've heard that. So. Yeah, there's some edge. There's not a lot of great stuff out there, though. That's part of the problem. You know, you get to this point, Frank, you mentioned Bud Dupree. I mean, is that something that's going to amp up their, you know, is it going to amp up their pass rush? I don't know. I mean, I really don't. I don't, you know, look at where he came from, and they're looking for pass rush help, too, and they didn't bring it back. So
Right. That's
a little bit concerning. I think finding an edge is going to be tough. You have some guys, you know, Jerry Hughes, if you want to try and get a veteran, somebody like that. Dupree, like you mentioned. I mean, there is Shaq Lawson, Marcus. There are guys out there, but I don't know how much better they're going to make you. But you better get another body because they need one more. And I don't think they can count on a seventh-round pick to be that guy.
Pete, in looking around the division, you gave the Colts the highest mark in the AFC South with a B+. What did you like about Indianapolis's haul?
Well, I think it starts with the wide receiver. I think when you look at that wide receiver, he's going to be a big-time player. I mean,
A.D. Mitchell.
And you know, he got attitude issues. You know, they knocked him down for that, and you saw that you know, how he was angry about that because it leaked out. But, you know, he's a diabetic, and supposedly he had some mood swings or whatever, but they'll get that under control. He's a big-time player. And then they got Latu. I mean, when you look at Latu, if he's healthy, and there's a risk there because he had medical, but if he's on the field, he's one heck of a pass rusher. So I think as a whole, they had a really good, you know, 1-2 punch. And then, you know, he got some good players down the line as well. I thought the Texans, you know, going through the division, the Texans draft wasn't very good after it was great last year. I mean, they added some guys that they need and needed positions. You know, they added your corner from that you asked me about on Friday from Georgia.
Yeah, Lassiter.
Yeah, I don't like the way he runs. So
yeah.
That was a little bit concerning to me. But you know, who am I to judge? I mean, I judge him, but they have a great track record, so it's hard to ping them really bad because they added that bullet kit as well, safety. But I thought the Titans did a nice job. And nobody wants to hear that in Jacksonville, but you had Latham to start at left tackle, and all of a sudden you have a big physical offensive line because you signed a center and they signed a guard. Then you go back in and you get Swift. And, I mean, Sweat, he's a feast or famine guy. You look at that, he could be a power player. He's got to get his body in shape, but they could nail that in the middle next to Simmons. And then you come back and get some guys like Brownlee, who I really liked at their cornerback position, and sixth-round receiver Jaquan Jackson from Tulane. I love their draft, and I think they're moving in the right direction. It's going to be a tough division, really is.
Pete, let's go back to the Jags for the corner spot for a second. Jarian Jones and DeAndre Prince are both looked at as inside guys. I'm not convinced. They're both really fast. I think Jones probably has better hips than Prince from what I'm being told, but I think they both can really run.
That's accurate.
So they both can really run. I think Jones is going to get a look outside. I think if you ask them how they hope it lands, I think they hope – I know he played in the slot at FSU. But I think they hope he lands outside. Don't you get a sense both those guys are going to get a look outside?
Well, you always want to get them a look outside, but you have to find a nickel. I just don't see that guy playing the nickel. That's just me. And I've talked to some other people around the league, and they don't think he's going to be the nickel. So they have to find a guy in there. But you try guys outside. Ideally, if you can get guys on the outside, you want to play out there. You know, the kid from Ole Miss looks like he's a little bit longer. You know, so I think he's strictly going to be an outside guy. In fact, I was watching some of this tape today, some more of it. There's a play where Brian Thomas ran by him for a touchdown. I don't know if you guys saw that, but he did. He toe-tapped in the back of the end zone and had a touchdown against him. But he's a willing tackler. I do know that, which a lot of guys who are just, you know, viewed as cover guys aren't. So he's an impressive-looking guy for down the line. But I think one of them, and, you know, I think it's the kid from FSU. I think he'll end up playing the nickel.
Yeah, I've heard Prince long and fast, but maybe not quite as twitchy as Jones is the
correct
the word. That's
correct.
Kind of the word you hear.
Hey, Pete, in terms of the new kickoff format, do you get a sense that this is being underplayed in terms of how it could possibly sway playoff berths in terms of the teams that are able to harness it and execute at a high level compared to those that have trouble making the acclimation? Because obviously you look at the Jaguars taking Cam Little in the sixth round, but to take running back Keelan Robinson in the fifth and basically concede, well, he is one of our two kick returners. There's going to be two guys back there. We know Devin Duvernay will be one of them. Keelan Robinson now in line to be the second. Is that something that if a team is able to really figure that part out, could that be the difference in going to the playoffs, not going to the playoffs, in your opinion?
Absolutely. And the flip side is how do you cover them, too? I mean, you got to be able to cover them, too, and how your kicker handles it. I mean, it's all – I think the teams that get creative with it – you know, you go back to last year when Belichick rushed the guy on the field goal from the outside. Nobody had done that before. And you said, oh, that's creative. Then teams started doing it, and nobody got there again. But I think creativity will be key on the kickoff returns, and that whether you're covering them, kicking them, or returning them. And that's why, you know, I think there is some value to having, you know, return men and having guys on the back end of the roster who can run down and cover. I think that that's all going to be essential to making the kickoff a play again, which is exactly what they're trying to do.
Pete Prisco with us talking NFL draft. He's from CBSSports.com, of course, brought to you by Showtime. Pete, let's go a big picture a little bit in the league. How do you think now that the quarterback thing is all played out, how do you think the quarterbacks will do? I think we all think Caleb Williams is going to be pretty good. After that, what are your expectations?
I'm big on Daniels. I think Daniels is walking into a good situation. He's got some good receivers in Washington. I think he's going to be good. You know, I think May might take a little while because, you know, they probably play Brissett early to try and get, you know, get May up to snuff. He needs some work on his mechanics. I think that's an issue. We know Penix isn't going to play. That was weird to me. I didn't understand it. If you were going to draft a quarterback at 8, you shouldn't have signed Kirk Cousins all that money. And then, you know, Bo Nix, well, they love him. I mean, Sean Payton loves Bo Nix, so he's probably going to play right away. Look, like I said the other day, one will be a star. One will be really good. One will be a starter for a couple of years and morph into a backup. One will end up being a long-term backup, and two will bust. That's the nature of the position. I mean, in 83 when they had 6 quarterbacks taken? Look how that group did. Some of them were stars, and we know those guys, but some of them weren't that good. And I think that's the nature of the position, particularly lately. These guys flame out quick, but that's why you do it. You find one, you play him. If he doesn't work out, then you go right back in and try and get another one.
The odd thing, Pete, was how after the 6, everybody else dropped. I mean, Michael Pratt, I'm like you. I liked him. Didn't even get taken.
He went 7th. He went 7th to the Packers.
Oh, he did. That's right. That's right. He did.
But that's a situation where he's not going to play. Yeah, but he's going to sit there for a couple
years. He did go 7th. My bad. I was thinking he was undrafted. But Rattler went low. He went low. Jordan Travis didn't go till the 5th. It's interesting, isn't it, that the first 6 go so fast, and then nobody goes for a while.
Well, I think some of that has to do with the fact that the 6 went is that they're peaking to next year. It is not a great quarterback class. By the way, Jacksonville probably have the number 1 overall pick next year.
That's
Carson
right.
Beck will be the number 1 overall pick.
Yeah,
and
I think so too.
Yeah, but you look at the class. I mean, Sanders, you know, what about Quinn Ewers is inconsistent. I mean, you can go on and on with the next group of guys, but I think Beck's going to be the number 1 overall pick, and there's not a great quarterback class on the surface. Now, guys emerged. Who would have thought that Daniels was going to be what he was this year and emerging as the number 2 overall pick? So somebody will – you know, or J.J. McCarthy getting into the top 10. So somebody will emerge and move up. But on the surface right now, it does not look like a great quarterback class.
Do you see the Jaguars doing anything in terms of trade or maybe asking for a pay cut with Zay Jones and Cam Robinson?
I don't think Cam. I think he's the one guy that brings a little bit of attitude to that position. I can't see them letting him go. Or telling him to take a pay cut because that wouldn't go over very well, believe me. And so I don't think that's going to be the case. But Zay Jones would be an interesting one. I mean, because technically he's the 4th receiver now, and you're paying him a pretty good, you know, price. So you could say, hey, Zay, we'll lower this and give you some incentives, or we're going to cut you or whatever. And he could say, no, I'm going to take my chances on the outside. Or he could sit there and say, we saw what happened to our receiving group last year.
Correct.
Let's not mess with it. We need the extra guy. He's got to be around. So I think that's probably ultimately what they'll settle on, is to keep him around at that price, just so you don't go into a situation with what happened last year.
I said the same thing at the top of the program. I don't mean this disrespectfully to the backups, but you don't want to be one twisted ankle away from Elijah Cooks and Parker Washington having to play. And if you're trying to win the Super Bowl or trying to get to the tournament, you don't want to have that happen, Pete, and I hear you. So I'd be
– And you know what else, too, Frank? The speed went away last year.
Right.
Well, now you have a couple guys who can run, but you still want to have at least one or two of those guys on the field. And so if one of them got hurt and Zay Jones stepped in, you're fine because you still can have a guy who can run. So I think they keep it around.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to wind up happening. Fair enough. Pete Prisco, where are you heading? Where's vacation? Where are we going? What are we doing?
Going to the Bahamas.
Okay.
Quick 5-6 night trip over to the Bahamas. Stay, you know, go to Atlantis. I love going to Atlantis. Relax, little R&R.
Was Aruba closed? Is that what happened to Aruba?
No, you know what happened to Aruba? Aruba's got rid of a lot of the direct flights from Fort Lauderdale, and you have to go like north, like some flights, like JetBlue used to fly direct. Now you got to go to New York. I'm not doing that.
Okay, okay. You know, you're a piece of king. He's the king of Aruba. You know,
that's right.
He's the king of Aruba, and so he's going
never
to Aruba.
Recovered.
I really am the king of Aruba. Probably been there 15 times.
There's no question. Well deserved time off. Enjoy your vacation, man. We'll talk to you when you get back. See you, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
Pete Prisco checking in from CBSSports.com. It is brought to you by Showtime. Yeah, dude, always good. He and Casey, they hop on a bird and go to freaking Aruba.
That's
that
awesome.
Kind of thing. So he said, Bahamas, that's not right. What's happening in the world? The world's messed up. I did pull up this list of Edge. By the way, we're going to have a shout coming up in about 5 minutes. So if you want to tell us what you thought of the draft, phone lines are going to be open in about 5-10 minutes or so. We're giving away a custom T-shirt for the best shout of the day, 641-1010. That comes up in just a bit. In the meantime, I did pull up a list of the best remaining Edge free agents. Boy, it's not a great group. It's not. I mean, Bud Dupree is out there. He would interest me. Shaq Lawson, as Pete said, they're not signing Yannick Ngakoue, right? They're not signing Ngakoue. Jerry Hughes is really old, good player. Boy, there's not much out there. Hey, again, that's the position that has me concerned a little bit, is backup edge. And I don't see much, barring a trade, I don't see much that would move the needle here.
Yeah, and obviously a trade's awfully tough in the summer for that position. It may have to come near the deadline. You know, they've backed the deadline up, which will be good. There'll be, you know, more teams that have figured out that, hey, this isn't our year. Does it make sense to, you know, get rid of a high-priced player and pick up some draft capital? So, you know, I think it may not come in until then. You have to hope that they have unearthed something in, you know, the veteran Travis Gibson. Miles Cole is a developmental player. I mean, Trent Baalke didn't hide that.
Yeah.
I mean, so
that's right.
They're not expecting anything out of Miles Cole. My guess is that's going to be 17 healthy scratches that he'll be inactive pretty much.
Yeah.
If that's even if he makes the team. It is interesting because with the change, you know, with now they've definitively now said what they're doing. And it does make me wonder about Yasir Abdullah and Tyler Lacy, because they're 3-4. They're 3-4 players. And so do you try Abdullah out at linebacker?
It's Sam linebacker.
To kind of see if he can help you there?
Because it's kind of a pass-rushing position now.
Yeah. Do you make Lacy more end than tackle? And see what
– I could see that.
Yeah, what he's got.
I could see Lacy being a backup to Trayvon Walker. And I could see Abdullah getting a look as a – it sounds like Devin Lloyd's going to be the Sam. I could see him getting a look out there. It's interesting. It's funny, the guys that – I mean, I missed some of these guys. Dante Fowler signed with the Commanders. I missed that. I guess I didn't realize. Maybe – and Cleveland Farrell's there too. Some of these guys – I mean
–
Caleb Chaseon got $5
million. Yeah. I mean,
got a $5 million deal to go play for the Panthers.
I would bring Bud Dupree in, and as long as he can pass a physical, I would sign him.
I think so, too.
I mean, I just –
that's probably the guy.
I just think it – again, you're not – that player does not need to come in and have 10.5 sacks. That player needs to come in and give you 5.5. That's what you're trying to find. It's somebody in a 17-game schedule playing about 40% of the snaps on game day. Can they find a way to get you 5.5 sacks? And obviously you hope they disrupt other things as well. But that's what you're looking for. And, you know, they're putting a lot in Travis Gibson, who's had moments, but he's also had lost years.
Right.
So,
I did forget Travis Gibson's here.
You know, that's the biggest concern on the roster. Now, I will say it's nice to cover a Jaguars team where my biggest concern is something to do with their depth, because – there's been plenty of years where you're worried about who the starters are, and I'm not so much worried now about their starting lineup. I think is good on both sides of the ball. But the depth at defensive end for them, I think, is a real problem.
Yeah, that's the one spot. Best free agents available as we speak today. Handful of guys: Justin Simmons. They don't need a safety. Stephon Gilmore is out there. That's interesting. Xavien Howard's out there. That one's interesting. They're both corners. Calais, I don't think they need that spot now. Adoree Jackson, another corner. A lot of corners out there. It'll be interesting to see what one of the Steven Nelson, Stephon Gilmore, and Steven Nelson. So a lot of cornerbacks are out there. It'll be interesting to see if they kick the tires on one of those guys. All right, you want to do a shout?
Let's do it.
Let's shout, folks. The number to call is 641-1010. We want to know what you thought of the Jaguars draft and the position of the team now. What stood out to you? Would they do right? Would they do wrong? Your thoughts are coming up, and we will pick a best shout of the day. Remember, you've only got 20 seconds to do it. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM. You know you
make me wanna shout. Time to shout.
Woo!
Looking for the best shouter of the day. But you have to do it in 20 seconds, so let's shout.
You ready for this, Carline?
Absolutely.
You look like you're ready for a shout. 641-1010, you got 20 seconds. Phones are loading up. We want to hear what you think. Did you like the Jaguars draft? We want your opinion. Let's go to the phones. We'll start with Daniel. Daniel, you've got 20 seconds. Go ahead, please.
I don't have any complaint with any one guy. My issue is that Balky trades back just like last year, but never used that capital to trade back up and get a more premium player. I feel like he did this year just like he did last year.
All right. Very good. Interesting take. Very good. Very intelligent take. It didn't bother me that they didn't get back up because I think what you gain, to your point, Hayes, you'll use down the road. But interesting take. Okay, Daniel, we appreciate it. 641-1010 is the number to call. If you've got an opinion, we want you to shout. Now is the time. Mike B. is up next. Hello, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Just going to say, overall, I'm pretty satisfied with the draft. Before it started, I was hoping our first picks would be cornerback, offensive line, defensive line, wide receiver in no specific order. We went that way. We got some quality backups. And by golly, we even got ourselves a kicker. So let's get it.
All right, Mike, well done. Very, you know what? That was a good call.
Yes.
He covered everything very specifically and threw in a Duval. The Duval helps, but you got to have a good call first. And it was a very well done, Mike. Very well done. 641-1010, we want to hear you shout. What did you think of the Jaguars draft? Ernesto is next. Hi, Ernesto.
In the immortal words, Sir Mix-a-Lot. We're down and long and strong and down to get the friction on. Woo!
There will be friction.
There will be friction. There's no question. Ernesto, thank you for the friction. There is that. 641-1010, the number to call. We want to hear what you thought of the Jaguars draft and how do you feel about where they stand at this point. Joel's next. Hello, Joel.
Hey, guys. I don't think they did much to help their most valuable asset, which is Trevor. They're basically telling us that the entire offensive line problem last year was Luke Fortner. If you really want to help Trevor, you're going to allow the team to run the ball, and they did not do a single thing to address running the ball in my opinion.
All right, Joel. Very good. Very intelligent call. I don't know if I completely agree with it, but a well-made point. I thought they addressed the line. Obviously, Mitch Morse, they drafted a lineman from Missouri who I think will be their swing tackle, but we'll have a chance to compete.
Well, and keep in mind, it's hard to count Ezra Cleveland.
Yeah.
To me, he's still a newcomer.
Yeah, I agree.
He was traded here at the deadline.
And he wasn't.
He was
free
hurt
agent.
When he got here. He hadn't played in 2 weeks. Then he got hurt again. So, I mean, be patient with Ezra Cleveland as well. To me, he almost has to count as a new guy as well.
I agree with that.
More than an entrenched incumbent guy.
Yeah, let's go back to the phones. You got 20 seconds now. We want to know what you think. Steve is up next. Hello, Steve. You got 20 seconds.
How's it going? I don't mind they traded back because I think next year's draft is a little bit deeper on the positions we need. And Balky, you know, I was against him at first. He doesn't have to pay me back my Venmo for my season tickets. I appreciate it. But I have all the trust in the Jaguars brass going forward. So,
Steve, thank you. That's a good call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has Trent Baalke, 641-1010, by the way, that's the number to call. We'd love to hear from you. We've got some open lines. Has Trent Baalke regained some respect in the fan base?
I think some, yeah. I mean, I think ultimately they're going to have to win. You know, it's going to have to be for Trent Baalke to have universal acceptance and for everybody to like him. The team that they've put together this year has to go out and win something of consequence, whether that's the division, whether that's a wild card playoff game. They don't have to go to the Super Bowl, but now I think you want to see the results. I think the offseason got off to a kind of a tough start, but yeah, I think they've done well. He did good in these 3 days.
Yeah, I think
I mean,
so
again, to pick up a third rounder and a fourth rounder in 25, I get it. There might be some frustrations that he didn't come back up the board, but when you get – assuming he doesn't use these to trade for a veteran, even if it's worst case scenario, you're using these picks in 25, that's going to really help you to have six picks in the first four rounds of that draft.
I think his free agents have been good, and I think his drafts have had some moments. I think he's been a better GM than he's been given. He hadn't been perfect, and he's made some mistakes, but I think he's been a better GM than he has been credit for. All right, those are our shouts. You did a great job. We've got a winner. I got one in mind. We'll pick one out. But right now, I might need some headlines. You got any headlines? You got any up there? I mean, I'm looking at you got that yellow. You're the yellow legal pad guy.
Yes.
Most people have gone white. You never went white, did you? You stayed yellow legal pad.
I'm going to be yellow until it all is over.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Yellow Till It's All Over has our Hayes headlines for the week. One segment to go. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Gather around.
It's Hayes' Headlines, presented by Harrell & Harrell. Don't settle for less than you deserve. Hear all about it. Here's Hayes Carline.
All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, J.J. LaSelva. I am Hayes Carline. Thanks to our friends at Harrell & Harrell. Give them a call at 251-1111. Hopefully you won't need them, but if you're hurt, give our friends Harrell & Harrell a call again. 251-1111. Let's jump right in. Trevor and Travis get their fifth-year option picked up.
Yeah, no surprise. And I think Trevor won't matter because I think they'll extend him, obviously, before that comes into play. But, yeah, they're two good players. They're two good players you drafted. And I'd love to see both of them make a second contract. Running backs don't always get one. I know that. But I'd love to see them both get it. Both good players. No real surprise there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, with Travis, it's just $6 million next year. So it's still pretty reasonable,
right?
Even though the position is getting less and less resources put towards it. So, yeah, I was glad to see that for sure. And I'm with you. I think Trevor Lawrence probably doesn't end up seeing that fifth-year extension. But it's good that they have it in place. Jarvis Landry will reportedly work out with the Jaguars during rookie minicamp. Landry has obviously had a lot of success in the NFL, but it's been a couple years, Frank. What do you make of the move?
You know what? Why not? Why not have a veteran guy? He's been to five Pro Bowls. He's been around. He's a good player. Why not see what's left? You got nothing to lose by kicking the tires, as they say. I think they've got a pretty good receiver room. I think if they hold on to Zay Jones and don't try and rework his deal, and I hope they do, I don't know where you put Jarvis Landry. He's not fast anymore, I wouldn't think. Zay Jones still is. So I don't know that there's a spot for him on the team. But why not? If he's good enough, there is. And again, what you don't want to get – I've said this 1,000 times, Hayes, to you, to others on the air, they're in their window. You don't want to be playing backups when you're in your window or inexperienced backups when you're in your window. So why not? I love that he's going to be here.
Let's stay with the AFC South, Frank. Outside of the Jaguars, who do you think had the best draft class and who had the worst? Rank them 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I probably would say that – I think the Jags, and I'm a homer guy, but was first. I think the Titans second. I think if the two guys they signed, the first two picks stay healthy, the Colts third, and the Texans didn't move the needle for me much. Didn't have a first-round pick, and after being very good last year. So I would go Jags, Titans, Colts, Texans.
Florida State legend Jordan Travis selected fifth round by the New York Jets. I think an ideal landing spot.
I do too. Sit behind a veteran, learn football from him. I think it's a perfect landing spot. If he's healthy, he's a great story, a great kid, and well, you can't talk to anybody that bumps into Jordan Travis that doesn't talk about what a wonderful, good, charismatic, good teammate guy he is. I love that he landed there. So what's Aaron Rodgers? 2, 3 years?
Two, I would think, at the max.
Two at the most, you think? If that's the case, if it's two or three, and you're probably right, maybe two's the max, then that's a perfect situation. I agree with you.
Jordan Travis is going to play for the Jets. Yeah. I mean, I think some way or – I mean, now part of that's Rodgers has to obviously get hurt, but I think that's probably going to happen. I mean, I get that he was pretty durable, but coming off the Achilles, I know they've tried to improve that turf there, but yeah, he's just getting up there. So it stands to reason to me that Jordan Travis will have a chance to, over the next 2 years, probably at least get some relief time. And I think he's going to make the most of it.
And more teams, I know Sean Payton did it, obviously, first, it seemed like, but more and more teams are using a running quarterback for a couple plays here or there. I could see him doing that.
Austin Reed, local product, undrafted free agent, signed with the Chicago Bears. So Denny Thompson was obviously telling us about how close Austin got with Caleb Williams. Now they're both in the same room.
And Caleb even tweeted about it right afterwards. I think that's really good. That could not have gone better for Austin Reed, a guy Caleb Williams is going to be the quarterback, be one of the quarterbacks on that team. Could not have gone better for another kid that by all accounts is a good dude. Good for Austin Reed out of St. Olaf.
The Chiefs extended tight end Travis Kelce today, 2 years, $34 million deal. Frank, does he have a chance to go down as the best tight end of all time?
He's in the conversation. He's certainly in the conversation. There's different eras of football, as you know, Hayes. There's the John Mackey, Mike Ditka era, where those guys were great players, but they weren't catching 80, 90 balls. The game was different. Nobody was. And so there's more games, there's more passes, there's more catches. So it's hard for me to compare Mackey and Ditka and even Ozzie Newsome, who came along a little later, and those guys to Tony Gonzalez and Gates. And it's just a different world. But having said that, the guys in this new world, Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez, yeah, Travis Kelce right there with them, no doubt in my mind.
If you play fantasy football, you might want to take Dak Prescott this season because he might break the record for attempts in a year. The Cowboys bringing back running back Zeke Elliott, Frank, who doesn't have a lot of gas left in the tank, and he's probably their best running back.
I saw that. Yeah, when Pollard left, it was a weird dynamic. Zeke was all the rage. Tony Pollard was the backup. Tony Pollard clearly became better. It became the star guy. Now he's gone, so Zeke comes back. Yeah, you're right. Ball's going to be in the air in Dallas. Dallas is an interesting team. Win 12 games every year and then have nothing to show for it. Very intriguing team this year.
Ricky Pearsall went in the first round, but he was the only Gator drafted. Is this the final indictment of Dan Mullen's recruiting lack of prowess?
In the event that you didn't hear the program earlier in the day, I was in school the last time the Gators only had one draft pick. It was 1980, and the year before they had been 0-10-1, Hayes. The last time they haven't had a defensive player picked, 1997. I hope this is the last year, but I'm astounded. But I'm going to say it again. A lot of that's on Dan Mullen, who just wasn't a very good recruiter and didn't work hard at it. But part of it's on Billy Napier, too, who has not done a very good job in the portal compared to others. Pearsall came out of the portal, Montrell Johnson's okay. I mean, Osiris Torrance was a very good portal pickup because those guys both played for him. But they haven't had very many. There should be more players from Florida drafted, even if Dan Mullen didn't do well.
Guardian caps have been approved if players choose to wear them.
They're goofy looking, but listen, safety first. I get it. You don't want CTE. You don't want players. I'll be very interested to see how many players really wear a guardian cap in a game. Some will. Some will. But was it Tom Kelso that had the shell and George Wallace, the offensive lineman? I think it was George Wallace. Something. Steve Wallace. But I What do you think? I wonder how many will actually wear them.
I don't think many will.
I bet some will. But some linemen will.
Yeah, they could. But I think it's a legal maneuver for the NFL to continue to try to avoid future litigation. But it'll be interesting to see how many players do choose to wear the guardian caps. Broadcast news, a lot of broadcast news today in the world of the NFL. Jason Kelce signing with ESPN. He'll be part of their Monday Night Countdown. And Matt Ryan now joining CBS. Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason are out.
Yeah, Phil Simms is 68. Boomer is 63. Both are gone. Obviously, Ryan is very young. That's what TV does. The old guy out, the young guy in. It'll be interesting to see. You know, they brought back Cowher, who had an expiring contract. Nate Burleson, who's young, so I expected him to be back. I wondered if Cowher might get it too, so I'm glad that he didn't. But, yeah, out with the old, in with the new. That's kind of what the TV does.
In the world of the PGA Tour, Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry won the Zurich in a playoff, and, boy, that was a fun celebration.
They sang Don't Stop. It was just fantastic. I was singing along with them. Did you hear it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you give me Rory McIlroy singing Don't Stop Believing, I've had a pretty good Sunday, bruh. Just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fun tournament, and certainly those two are a lot of fun. Shane Lowry is hysterical. Did you see the belt? And he couldn't really get it on. He's like, boy, this thing is really snug. And he was cracking Rory.
It was hilarious.
I've stopped believing Rory will ever win another major.
Yeah, it's been a while. There's no doubt about it. It has been a long
have
time.
Have fun with your Zurich title, Rory.
I felt that way, too.
Yeah, no
and
doubt
I like
about
Rory.
It.
I hope he does, but I agree with you, JJ. I don't think so either.
I think he'll win another major, but it is striking. He's certainly not going to get to the 12, 13 that many thought he had a chance at. But
Tiger and Phil have won a major since Rory.
Wow.
Now, I will defend Rory. He has won a Players and he's won a FedEx Cup in that time. So it's not like he doesn't win big events, but he has. It is a very long major.
But that is a good stat. Tiger and Phil have both – I didn't know that, JJ, but I did. I didn't think about it. You said it. Tiger and Phil have both won a major since Rory. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll get one, but I am surprised it's taken as long as it has since his last one. All right, in the world of fighting, Mike Tyson and Logan Paul, their fight will be sanctioned on July 20th. It will count in their professional careers. It's going to be 8 rounds, 2 minutes.
I'm so rooting for Tyson. Like, as hard as I've ever rooted for a boxer ever, I think. Are you, like, saying?
Oh, yeah. He's going to be 58 when the fight occurs, and Paul will be 27.
Wow. 58 versus 27.
I think he's going to kill Logan Paul.
Yeah.
Is it Logan Paul or Jake Paul? I think it's Jake Paul.
It's one of the I think he's going to lose.
I actually think it's Jake Paul.
It's Mrs. Paul.
I think he's
going to
look, I think he's going to look really, really old.
I think it may be Jake. I don't know who it is.
Yeah,
one of us.
I think it's Jake Paul.
I think it may be Paul McCartney. I'm trying to
that
figure out.
That would be something.
That's what I think it actually is.
We didn't get to this last week because we were so wrapped up in the draft, obviously, but Jaden Rashada transferring to Georgia. Frank, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think he's very good. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised he'd want to go to Georgia. Who wouldn't? It's the creme de la creme. But I'm surprised Georgia's taking him. He had no – when the Florida thing blew up, he had very few takers. He landed at Arizona State, wasn't very good, and – honest to God, when he left Arizona State, I expected Kansas State or Wake Forest or Purdue. I'm very surprised, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's something in there because Kirby Smart doesn't get it wrong very often. But I'm very surprised, not that he'd want to go to Georgia, but that Georgia's taking him.
I was surprised Georgia took him as well. Todd Golden did a postseason wrap-up over the weekend with local reporters in Gainesville and did confirm Micah Hand-Logden will redshirt this coming season.
Yeah, he intimated that when we were down there. We were at Spurrier's a few weeks ago. He said, listen, whatever happens with Micah, he may be a redshirt. It's hard for anybody to come back from that injury, particularly if you're 7-1. You know, when we were done with him, you got the hunch, didn't you?
It was interesting because we saw Micah in the restaurant.
And I talked to Micah afterwards.
Yeah, he had like a compression sleeve on the leg, but he was walking without the assistance of.
Yeah, it was a pretty pronounced limp.
Yeah.
But he certainly didn't have a cane or anything. Yeah. So, but I, hey, you know what? It sounds like to me that's a decision that Micah, the family, Todd all made together. Why don't we not rush this?
Yeah.
He may have an NBA career. He may have. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
And get stronger.
Yeah, that's right. So it makes some sense.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Over the weekend, one of our favorite films celebrated its anniversary.
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt. A newt. Got better.
My favorite line from the movie. My favorite. When Monty Python first came out, my buddies and I used to walk around going, I got better. That was my favorite line of the movie. It really was.
And it's there's a million of them.
I think I'm a Holy Hand Grenade fan myself.
Oh, it's so great.
I got better.
I love, there's so many great scenes in that movie. It came out in 1975. How about that?
The rabbit.
Oh, the rabbit. Look at the bones.
How about the guy on the bridge? You have to answer, like, what's your favorite color?
Right.
And then, like, the next guy, it's like,
what's the population? The airspeed velocity of the European Sparrow? it's incredible. And how about the castle when the chaste goes in there and it's all the 20-year-old women?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Happy birthday to Michelle Pfeiffer, turns 66 today, one of our favorites of all time.
She's my age.
And
bless her soul.
Yeah. And Jerry Seinfeld.
Bless America.
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld, 70 today. As well, we will wrap it up with music. Madonna, who has the voice of an angel, is being sued by money-grubbing fans who are miffed that the Material Girl showed up hours late for a concert, that the arena was too hot, and they claim Madonna lip-synced some of the performance. Look.
Some. It was all.
If you're lucky enough
you can't
to be in the presence of Madonna... Yeah. Count yourself lucky and give her everything in your bank account.
What has happened to our world that you can't sue Madonna?
No.
I mean, of all the things you can't do in the world, you can't sue Madonna. There's some federal, universal, hemispheral law that says you can't. Who sues Madonna?
I hope this goes in front of a judge who will do the right thing and not only throw this case out, but imprison them for 25 years.
Who sues Madonna?
Terrible. That's going to do it.
Well done on headlines, as a matter of fact. Great show. That was fun. Thanks to Pete Jenkins for stopping by. The 82-year-old defensive line coach from LSU, he was fantastic. And Pete Prisco, Pete and Repeat today. Pete Prisco did a great job. We appreciate he's on vacation. By the way, Mike B., well done. You are the shout winner. Congratulations. T-shirt coming your way. We'll be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Don't go anywhere. Rick Ballew is next. For Hayes and JJ, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.